All right, I'm Tarek. I am an addict, and it is with great pleasure that I introduce this morning's speaker. Our relationship has many different dynamics, I would say. We're very close friends. Technically, I would be called his sponsor. He is one of my mentors, my 10-step buddy, my longest-running 10-step buddy. 11 years. Pretty much knows me better than anybody in my life, outside of my partner, Newly, because she shares a bed, and Brandon and I will never share a bed. Most guys that I work with, and they give me all these excuses of why they can't be on the Sunday call. I'm always going to be, questioning, but not with Brandon, because, I know what his life is like and the amount of things that he is committed to: family, work, the farm, children, and sponsors an army of men, and is actively doing work with all of them. And he travels 3 days a week. It's quite impressive. And I love listening to him talk. I can sit and listen to him talk for an entire weekend. I have no idea what he's going to do this morning. But Brandon, these next 50 minutes are all yours. And everybody, I give you Brandon P. from Waleska, Georgia.
Morning, everybody, or good afternoon, Kevin. Well, we might share a bed if the bus starts smoking crack. Maybe not a bed, but anyway, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Brandon, member of Alcoholics Anonymous, member of Cocaine Anonymous. My sobriety date is June 15th, 2011. Get all this stuff out of the way. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I sponsor people and they sponsor people. And those things are all very important to me. Because it still amazes me the number of people walking around in the fellowship saying that they're willing to sponsor people, but they don't have a sponsor themselves. So they're promoting a concept that they don't believe in themselves. And so there's a lot of hypocrisy within the rooms. My home group, my Sunday night AA home group, is the Sunday night meditation meeting. We meet at 7 o'clock in Woodstock, Georgia at the Howell Place. We go through all the promises in the book, all the major promises, the third, fifth, ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th step promises. We read them as a group, and then we meditate on a specific line each week. And you tend to have an experience with the promises in a different way if you actually do that. My CA home group meets on Monday night at 8:30 p.m. It's the Beyond Human Aid group of Cocaine Anonymous. We meet at the Branches of Christ Church, get about probably 100 plus people. A lot of newcomers, open discussion meeting. I currently am in the process of taking 10 different gentlemen through the steps. Meet with one of them Sunday night, two of them Monday night, two of them Tuesday during the day, and then there's the rest of the guys I'm doing over the phone, kind of in this kind of conversational way of having the steps. Of those, I've got, I think, seven fifth steps coming up. Not real excited about that, but we'll manage that accordingly. I think it was last Wednesday, I counted up at the end of the day just because somebody asked me, and I think I had 62 recovery related phone calls. So I'm pretty busy in recovery. My mind operates in a highly logical way, and it likes to dissect things and understand things. And it served me well in terms of recovery, because it forces me to continually seek and try to understand and deepen my relationship with whatever this power is that that we're all interacting with. Some of us believe we are, others don't. That shows up in a defect of character that is, I think I know what I'm talking about often. And I think I know what I'm talking about often because I've spent the time to explore what that means. I used to be a person that was completely full of shit. If you asked me anything, I always had an answer to it. And even if I didn't know the answer, I would still tell you an answer. And then if you knew the answer, then I realized I was cornered and I would find some way to justify how my answer was actually the correct answer, even though you knew more than me. I had a really neat experience when I got sober is my kids would ask me questions and I learned this phrase called, or that sounds like this, I don't know. And then the next sentence I would say after that is, why don't we look it up together and learn something? And so that's kind of been the quest over the last 11 years is to try to learn something new and deeper and have a different understanding of things that I already think I know about. And one of the things that I've been kind of playing with and the answer when I asked whatever that power is, what I should talk about today. And it's kind of been this concept that I've been playing with for pretty much since we, Tarek and I put this on the calendar of how steps 3 through 9 are all connected. And the peak of that connection comes at the 6th step. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of explore the promises that come with each step and my understanding of how the step works and show how our willingness to make amends actually shows up in the 3rd step or the demonstration of the willingness in the 3rd step shows up in the 9th step said a different way. And that the 6th step is this place where we get to this place where we don't want to be the way that we have been to this point. So I feel like I want to justify why I'm a little worn out. I started working my dad, just some background on some other stuff going on in my life. My dad broke his neck back in September and we're in the process of converting his house to handicap accessible. And since I'm in construction, that task falls on me. And I was over at their house from 7:30 yesterday until probably 7:30 a.m. till 7:30 p.m. doing drywall work, framing, and electrical. And I went to dinner with my daughter and my wife last night, and I think I was actually falling asleep at the table. Then we came home, and I kind of rested on the couch and had a good night's sleep, but I really have no idea how awake or aware my mind is right now. So we'll see what happens. So not that the first 2 steps aren't important to me, because I think that the first step is the whole thing. And the first step is something that I don't think that we can actually, the first step is something that happens to us. And I believe that fully Tarek and I will talk about this from time to time, trying to just guess, or Tarek might actually know, but like, I'm sure that I've taken or attempted to take between 100 and 200 guys through the steps. And so I've got a lot of data. I got a lot of data on how we behave and what we do and what works and what doesn't work. And I can say it in a room like this. I have never seen a guy actually stay sober or clean and sober that where the obsession wasn't already removed before they showed up. They may put together a little bit of time, but I've never actually seen them stick around. And I think that has to do with something that called God's grace that shows up before we even know that God's grace is there. God's grace showed up in my life, struck me sober on June 15th, 2011. And that wasn't a date I picked. I had nothing to do with that plan. To qualify myself, I had an experience about 2 weeks before I was struck sober where I wanted to I didn't want to. I was actually going to shoot myself in the face. And I was talking to somebody about this the other day. The difference between the desire to want to die and actually coming up against the experience of death are two completely different experiences. There's all sorts of people that want to die and they hate their life and all that. But unless you've actually died or you've attempted to die, that's a different experience. And something happens within you where you start to look at reality in a different way. And it opens up an alternate, I don't know if it opens up a alternate like universe to you or something, or maybe I actually died and this is just all dream world that I'm in the middle of talking about, because it kind of seems like that if I look at my life. And so I had a night where I wanted to die. I didn't. It scared the shit out of me, sobered me up for 4 days. 4 days later, I was back at it. And then within 2 weeks, I'm on an island with no bridge off the coast of South Carolina. And my wife announces to me and to her parents that she no longer wants to be married to me. And because of financial decisions and some other things, house, wife, car, kids, everything that I thought was important were ripped away from me in that moment. And then I vowed the rest of that week that I was going to return to work, make so much damn money that my wife was going to regret the day that she ever left me. And I returned to work on Monday and they fired me. So I had this complete failure at living, complete failure at dying. Couldn't exist. Realized that maybe I was living life a little improperly and that I should make some adjustments. It was suggested to me that I had an alcohol problem. And so I ended up showing up and coming into the fellowship and hanging around for a little while before I actually committed to do this thing. I didn't think relapse was a thing when I showed up. I thought that once you joined, you were a member and that was it. Because I still thought it was a matter of choice. I didn't realize that it's not a choice. It's just what happens to you. So that first step is an experience that has to work us. The problem, I think, is that a lot of people lose the connection with that first step. They lose the connection with the fact that they're powerless. They lose the connection with the fact that they weren't doing anything to keep them sober. Reconstruction of the ego, if you will, comes back into their life and they start to think that they know some shit and they're no longer teachable. And when they're no longer teachable, then all of a sudden they work themselves right out of the rooms. What I see most of the time, though, is people just stop putting in the effort. The second step to me is a proposition of is there the possibility that whatever that power that's working in your life could actually take you beyond where you are now? And then we get up to this third step, and then we have to actually make this decision to turn our will on our life over the care of whatever this power is, which it's always kind of a funny thing to me because I'm a smart ass. And so my God's a smart ass, as evidenced by the fact that God let me live through the night and then took away everything else within 2 weeks. Because the way that I look at it is God just said, you're not going to get it. I'm going to take everything else away from you. And that's what happened. So I can just see God sitting up there with St. Peter, and Bill's writing this book, and he's writing this prayer about turning our will and our life over the care of God, and God looking at it and just saying, seriously, you're going to tell me that you're going to turn your will and your life over the care of me, which I can take your life from you anytime I want? And then St. Peter looking at God and just saying, let them have the prayer. And so we got the prayer. And so the way I look at the prayer is it's like, God, take me, do whatever you want with me. Remove me, bondage of self, so that I can better do what you want. Take away my difficulties, not for me, but for a demonstration of what you're capable of. And then there's no amen at the end of the third step prayer. So the amen comes over at the seventh step on page 76, where it talks about how it's the third step with teeth, and then it closes with amen. And so to me, everything from 3 to 7 is a continuous prayer that we're continually to going deeper into this relationship with this power. And so the prayer is not complete until I complete 7. But there's a lot of stuff that happens in there. And so for me, like diving into and looking at these inventories and really exploring them gives me this realization that I'm wrong about what I think about myself. I'm wrong about how I think that the world is supposed to operate. I'm wrong about the harms that I believe other people have done to me. And the craziest thing, there's so many things that we hear in the fellowship that I don't know where they get them from. Now, there's a couple of the concepts that I hear that people talk about at meetings that come out of the 12 and 12. And so they have a justifiable reason for using them. But the thing that I can't find, and I've looked, so I don't know where it is this idea that we have a part in the resentment. And every time that we're talking about the fourth step in a meeting, people are talking about my part, my part, my part. I saw my part. I saw that this was what my part was. And I don't get that because I don't know where it says that. Perhaps there's a place that says it, but I don't know where it is. But in the fourth column of the resentment inventory, it says, referring to our list again, putting out of the minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. And if I'm looking for my mistakes, I don't need you to participate in this thing. If I'm looking at my own mistakes, 100% of my mistakes are my responsibility. Where had I been selfish? Where had I been dishonest? Where had I been self-seeking? Where had I been frightened? And so if I'm looking at those components, you're relieved from any responsibility whatsoever in my mistakes. Now, that doesn't mean that I condone what you did. It doesn't mean that I'm okay with what you did. There's a whole lot of people out there that say, well, if I get over this, then I'm just going to open myself up to having that happen again, which I don't see it that way. If I'm an asshole and I clean up me being an asshole, that makes me less of an asshole. It has nothing to do with you. And so I really, dive in and look at that, kind of rewind and really focusing back on what I was talking about, the promises. So we had this paragraph on page 62, which talks about this relationship that we have with this power, director, higher order, actor, lower order, principal, higher order, agent, lower order, father, child. And then it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, that employer provided what we needed if we kept that employer close and performed that employer's work well. So if I'm not performing my employer's work well, do I still expect to get paid? I'm pretty certain that if I'm not doing my employer's work well, that I'm not going to have a job anymore. So the way that I see this relationship is I got to continue to show up and do this stuff if I want to get paid. For me, sobriety and abundance and things like that are how I get paid. So the more that I actually show up and help other people, the more I'm going to get. Now, God and I have had several conversations about that because I think I show up and I work really hard. And I realized this morning as I was going out to do farm chores before this call that there's an element of me that I don't know that I've been aware of until this morning that because I work really hard and I'm really busy, I think that you guys should give me credit for it. the fact that I got up and went outside and was doing all this farm work this morning, saving a bloody chicken from two other chickens, that you guys should know, because I'm a martyr. And you know, that's a random thought that shows up on a random Sunday morning in December, of the fact that I think I work really hard at stuff to get credit for it, and nobody's giving me credit for it, and then I get butthurt over it. I'll have to look at that a little more. So established on such a footing, having this new employer, I became less and less interested in my little plans and designs. More and more, I became interested in seeing what I could contribute to life. Because remember, I'm doing my employer's work. So I'm trying to figure out what I can contribute. As I felt new power flow in, as I enjoyed peace of mind, as I discovered I could face life successfully, as I became conscious of my employer's presence, I began to lose my fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. Okay, so that's kind of like I'm losing my fear forever. Because if it's today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, there's no other place to have fear except for in the past. And well, I'm not there anymore. We were reborn. So when I take this idea that I'm actually going to turn my will and my life over to the care of whatever this power is, I get to have a new life. I get to have a new experience with life if I'm reworking the steps. And so then I have to really dive in and see what caused my failure. And that's where we're getting into this idea of the fourth step. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I see that a lot of people, after they kind of get a little bit of time, they start to even newcomers, really, you know, they want to take care of the girlfriend and the job and the money and all that stuff so that their mind can be at ease, so that the spiritual stuff, we'll just deal with that whenever. And I see people that have been sober for a little while doing this too, right? Like the job and the wife and the commitments, the physical becomes so important. Mentally, they're going crazy, but they don't turn to God. And so what happens is they slowly start seeping back into that material world where they're going to seek relief from whatever that material or whatever that spiritual malady is. So this kind of goes both ways. In the beginning, people are slow to get to the spiritual. And after people have been around a little while, they tend to slide away from the spiritual. And so then we look at our fears, right? There's a promise in the fear inventory, which I guess it would be a fourth step promise. Is perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role that God assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think God would have us, and we humbly rely upon God, does God enable us to match calamity with serenity? Kind of snuck that one in there on us, right? Don't hear a whole lot of people talking about the four-step promises, but I guess that's one of them. I guess maybe here's another one. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answers will come if we want it. I don't know. Maybe that's not one. Clearly, I did a lot of preparation for this talk, so we'll continue to see what happens. So then I take this, whatever these pitiful inventories are, and I take it into the fifth step, and that's where I'm really trying to, if I'm approaching it properly, I'm really trying to get a new perspective on what I think about life. I'm trying to get some alternate considerations. It talks about in the book, like reading inventory to multiple people to get multiple perspectives. I think there was one inventory I did at about, I think it was about 6 years. I read that inventory, I think to 8 to 10 people. And what was very interesting to me is that it wasn't until the fourth guy reading it to Drew, and Drew said, "Man, you are one entitled motherfucker." And it floored me because I never saw myself that way. And so then I went and I pulled out the notes from where I'd read that inventory to Tarek and to two other people. Nobody else had any entitlement stuff in there. And so that kind of really showed me that sometimes different people have different perspectives. And the other thing about inventory with me is the more I read it, the less it has power over me, and the less I'm going to try to justify my position to somebody. And so a shift happens to where I'm no longer trying to sell this idea to somebody else. If I'm no longer trying to sell this idea to somebody else, who knows what will come out? Maybe it's with the fourth person that I'm no longer selling myself. And so out of that, you know, I have this period before the sixth step, which is the returning home. And there's a bunch of questions in the returning home. And I've seen a lot of people skimp on this returning home idea, but I'll tell you, one of the most powerful returning homes that I saw the guy never returned home, is we finished the fifth step. We were, it was before the old Monday night CA meeting, and I had written this list of defects and self-defeating principles, and I had given it to the guy. We had probably about an hour before the meeting. I put it down in front of him and I said, "I want you to just sit here and keep reading this list. When I come back in an hour, I want you to tell me whether or not you want to be that way anymore." And I left. And I'll tell you, when I returned to that room, physically it was the same person sitting in that chair, but it was a new person. And I walked in the room and he looked at me and he said, "Brandon, I don't want to be that way anymore." He said, that doesn't work for shit. I want to be a new person. And he's become a new person. He's since gotten married. He has two kids. He's got a career. And the thing that the spiritual appendix talks about, spiritual appendix 2 talks about, is it talks about this idea of change. It only says a form of the word change 15 times on that page. So what that's telling me is that in order for me to get to this place where I'm able to actually go and have a functioning life, I've got to change. And that might be at 5 months sober. It might be at a year sober. It might be at 6 years sober, 11 years sober, 30 years sober. Is my life as currently constructed completely and utterly acceptable to me? Or as a buddy of mine says, am I winning? And if I'm not winning in every aspect of my life, I've got some work to do. And so we get up to what I call is like the peak of this 3 through 9 mountain, right? Is we get to this paragraph that they've written a whole essay on in the 12 and 12. But it's a paragraph. And people talk about how, you know, they step 6 and 7, there's only a paragraph here. And well, before we get to that, I forgot about the fifth step promises, right? We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, even in the last year, right? Since the last time I went through the steps. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye because I see it now. I see how that guy that was pissing me off, maybe he had a justifiable reason for it. I can now approach him on a different basis. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. That's one of the greatest promises in the entire book. I mean, that's rival and we relax and take it easy, right? Being alone at perfect peace and ease. Are you alone at perfect peace and ease? Or are you too busy trying to arrange life and everybody in it to your own willful desires? Like when you shut your eyes, is it turned off? If it's not, there's more to explore there, guys. Our fears fall from us. It's kind of a magical sentence, isn't it? Right? The fears just falling away, like you got some force field around. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience, which we talked about is change. The feeling that the drink or drug problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Insert whatever your first step experience was. The feeling that the money problem has disappeared will often come strongly. The feeling that the relationship problem, whatever it is, it's falling from you. Whatever that first step experience, we got to retranslate this book to our current first step experience. Because if I've been sober for a little while, drugs and alcohol aren't my problem anymore. What is my current first step experience? Is that falling from me? We feel as if we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. That sounds pretty fucking awesome, doesn't it? Just the source energy that created everything we're walking hand in hand with. Yeah, I want some of that, right? So that is the sixth step, right? We can answer the questions to our satisfaction. Was I thorough? All those questions in returning home. We then look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Am I willing to change? It's okay if I'm not, but let's be honest about it. This last set of steps I went through with six guys, and just due to circumstances, only four guys listened to my fifth step, and they wrote I went last because I was way more sober than the rest of them, so I wanted them to have the benefit of having me critique them. But then I knew that it was kind of going to be like a boomerang. I knew that they were going to unload on me when they got a chance to take shots at me. So you know, I'm all spiritual and everything, and I have to listen to these people with way less sobriety than me give me these considerations. It's very humbling. So I've got this list that each one of them gave me, and I'll tell you. I think my favorite comment was when one of the guys gave me his list. I said, "Yeah, I hear all that other stuff, but that last thing, I don't think I agree with that." And he goes, "That was a direct quote from you." It's kind of hard to defend that when I said it and he just repeated it. But so there wasn't really a sense of willingness to want to change from that fifth step. I sat with it for a long bit, and then we got this one sentence that's got our one question that's got one question mark and two questions in it. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things which we have admitted are objectionable? So the second question first is this objectionable to me or not? Because if it's not objectionable to me, then I'm not going to change. And so for me, and usually when I take guys through the steps, I usually have them sit on the sixth step for a week or two to see if an experience happens. Usually one of two things happens. Either they completely act out in their defects. One of those things that they're that's all over their inventory. They do exactly that. Or the only way I can say it is God comes and visits them in some way. And I tell a guy to sit on six until one of those two things happen. Now, after 2 weeks, if a guy's not done it, I'll generally move along because I've seen guys just hang out there and not do anything. So I was doing the same. I was following the same instruction as I was sitting on six waiting for something to happen. Now, what happened to me this last time was I was visiting another group. There were only six of us in the group. I don't remember what the discussion lead was, but one of the things I started with is I started reading some of my self-defeating principles in the defects list. And what I realized while I was reading is that three out of the four that I had this idea, this concept in it that I want to make progress or have success with no effort. And I read them and I don't think I realized that three out of the four of them had said that. And so I actually said out loud while I was reading it, I was like, wow, that one's on here three times. And then finished my share, and then we opened it up for discussion. And the thing that struck me is that same concept was on a piece of inventory that I had read to this guy named Mike Lorenz at about 3.5-4 years sober. And when I read it to Mike, he was packing to go on a trip to go be a speaker somewhere. And so he was kind of listening to me as he packed. And I really didn't think he was paying any attention to me because he had no comment whatsoever the entire time. And I get to this one piece of inventory and Mike goes, so let me get this straight. You want to make maximum amount of money with minimal effort. And I remember when he said it, I actually said out loud, wow, Mike, when you say it, it sounds really bad. And I'm sitting here in this meeting at noon in Georgia on a Tuesday night, and that conversation with Mike from 7 years ago comes back to me. And in that moment, I realize, fuck, I still haven't changed. It's the same. And it's hitting me like it hit me then. I get kind of choked up and a little bit teary and start having this experience with, why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep coming back to the same place? And in that moment, at the peak, I needed God. I needed God's help to take the momentum from that experience into the rest. And it's when I did that, I actually said the seventh step prayer in the meeting. And had an experience with that. God, have all of me. Do whatever you want with me. Take away every one of these problems that stands in my way of your kids. That's what the seventh step prayer says to me. Amen, please. And then there's the most misunderstood pages of the book, I think, are pages 23 to 43, where it talks about power, choice, and control. But the second most misunderstood pages of this book start on page 76 and go all the way to page 84. And it's the eighth and the ninth step. And it is amazing to me how that eighth step in the short form uses one word twice, and how people will try to twist and justify and explain why the word all doesn't mean all. We've got all these pages that talks about the different conditions and circumstances and ways that it gives us guidance as we go through this. And I'll tell you that one of the things that one of the things that is the coolest part of the fellowship to me is other, well, there's two parts that are really cool, is when a guy goes out of town and he says, hey, who do we know in this area? And they'll reach out to me, and I'll always reach out to Tarek, and then he'll usually reach out to Chris, Chris R, and we'll find somebody in that town. And what's really cool to me is how the fellowship shows up. We had a guy go out of town. I think he went out to Arizona or something like that. And a guy picked him up at the airport. He had dinner with his family. A bunch of his sponsees came over and hung out with him. That's awesome. But the other part that's really cool is when somebody has a question about amends. And people will reach out to Tarek or I, and we'll know who to refer them to. Because somebody has had the experience that this guy is getting ready to go make an amends about. So we've got this huge network of people that have been through some of the craziest shit, experienced the power of God showing up in their life, and people don't access it. And so to me, the decision of turning your will and your life over to the care of God, do you mean it when you get to steps 8 and 9? Do you really trust that God has a purpose for you going and making this amend? Do you really think that God can keep you safe and protected? Because otherwise, the third step decision or prayer is simply just it's kind of lip service, right? Oh, I'm totally going to turn my will and my life over to care of God, but I'm not going to make that amends because God can't protect me in that experience. But one of the other things that I've observed, and it's been very evident when we cover the ninth step promises in this meeting that I attend, is the way that people share, specifically around this promise, but I've started to hear it in other places too, is if a person hasn't made their amends and they want to talk about the ninth step promises, it's always in a theoretical way. It's like the things that I could get if I actually did this thing. The theory that God's going to keep you safe and protected. Show me. Because these promises that come at the end of steps 8 and 9 are associated with the completion of steps 8 and 9. The promise comes at the end of the step. And so what's amazing to me is the people walking around that are throwing the promises around but they've never taken the time to understand what is it that we're even talking about here. Because this book, it's a textbook, it's meant to be studied, but it's very mathematical in the way that it presents. It's you do these things, you get these things. So the ninth step promises come when I do the ninth step. And so if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, which phase? What are we even talking about? We're talking about amends. We will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. So if you're not amazed, if you're not out there sharing amends experiences with tons of people, you're probably not halfway through. Because I'll tell you from my own experience and from the experience of a ton of guys is that the people that won't even return your phone calls, there's evidence in that too. There's evidence in the fact that you hurt these people so bad that they don't even want to talk to you. What I love is the theoretical, well, what's going to happen if I call this girl and I do this and so on and so forth. And, you know, she used to be in love with me and I want this and all that. And it's like, they're assuming that that person's even going to take their phone call. It's like everybody's just waiting on Brandon to show up and fix everything. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That sounds cool. Let's do that. I have to make the amends first. We won't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. Now, here's where, like, this meditation on a specific line that we do in this meeting, this is where this line transformed for me. I won't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on the experience that I had with amends. Because if I've made an amend, I'll see that I'm useful. We'll catch that in a later one. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace as the result of our amends. This one's incredible. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others when I make my amends. That's what I was talking about with Tarek and this idea of like having a network of people that you're sharing your amends with. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change as the result of our amends. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us because I've cleaned everything up with everybody and I've paid everybody the money back. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us because I will see that I've turned my will and my life over to care of God and I got results. And as a result of that, I'll suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Are these extravagant promises? Fuck no, they're not. They're being fulfilled among us only as quickly or as slowly as we make our amends. They will always materialize if we actually make our amends. Now, one of the things that I've been playing with, and I just think is funny, and I was going to bring it up earlier, but there's this thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which it's a scale that there's knowledge goes from low knowledge to high knowledge, and then are from low knowledge to high knowledge is on the bottom scale, and then confidence being low and high confidence is on the other scale. And there's this place called Mount Stupid. So the scale does, I don't know which way you guys are looking, but it kind of goes up and then it dips and then it slowly works its way up. And this point called Mount Stupid is when I have very little experience, but I have a ton of confidence. And that place of Mount Stupid is my personal experience. You can look at your own if you've got some time. My personal experience was Mount Stupid showed up around 9 months and stayed there until about 18 months. And then you fall into this thing called the pit of despair. And then you slowly work your way back up in knowledge and confidence. And when you hear people sharing about amends that haven't made any, they're still up there on Mount Stupid. And they still think that they know what the experience of amends sounds like or is going to look like, but it's completely theoretical. And they really haven't turned their will in their life over to the care of God. So I guess that's what I was going to talk about.
Thank you, brother. Very pleased that we had as many new people. And when I say new, just on the lower end of the experience scale, when it comes to living this way of life. And Brandon gave you a clear picture of what the way of life looks like with the actual form and the structure that's played out in the steps, specifically 3 through 9. One of the things that floored me when he was talking, as he was sharing that story about realizing an aspect of his character that's still here 10 years later, or however long, 9 years since Mike gave him that information in the fifth step. And that's what I've discovered over 15 years, is many of my defects are still here, if not all of them. The only thing that I think that has transformed is my awareness and my ability to observe their manifestation. And what I get to do is experience the grace of God from time to time with this pausing when agitated or doubtful. And the defect doesn't become a shortcoming. It still remains a defect because it's in my character. It's operating. Now the grace of God is what allows me to turn sometimes, not all the time. I turn a lot more than I did 15 years ago, like Brandon probably would also say. So that was a wonderful. But it leaves you in this place of wondering, you know, why am I doing all these things? Like Mike Crispin, we haven't forgot about the fucking shit sandwich you gave us at the end of the meeting last week. And it runs along those same lines of, they tell me to put everything I put in front of God or the steps, I'm going to lose. And then I put God in the steps in front of everything and I lose everything. And then Brandon's describing a way of life. And then I sit in that meeting 9 years later and realize, holy shit, how much have I really changed? These are conversations that must be had. I don't know what's true. I don't know what's false. Here's what I do know, without a shadow of a doubt, that living the way of life that Brandon described this morning makes me a better human being. That's it. Makes me a better human being. I want to thank Brandon for joining us this morning and giving us a wonderful description of what any length looks like as it relates to those steps and some insights that, you know, some of us don't think about. It depends on where the focus is. Is it on drugs or is it on my character? So, or alcohol for that matter. So one, we got to do some house cleaning. And before I do that,